All right, we're about to go around the NFL, but a couple more mentions I want to have from the question of the day. What's something that you probably should have practiced before you actually did it? Shout out to Jazz Chisholm, who said that if he does do the home run derby again, first he'll have to hit 20 home runs before that point, but he will actually practice.
Hey, man, might be good advice.
He said he didn't want to change his swing, and I'm like, yeah, it looks like a regular season swing for sure. You're hitting singles and maybe doubles down the line. I will say there was some of those was like, oh, that's a double down the line. I like that. Somebody said skateboarding since they were 8, so they thought they could surf, grabbed their friend's board. Damn near drowned.
Yeah, man.
Yep. Apparently, that is a big deal. Mm-hmm. Breathing control and lyrics. There's a lot of people getting at you with the.
Yeah, no, that's a real thing, man.
Performing, but then also just public speaking.
Yeah. Like just being comfortable up there, knowing what to say, how to engage with the crowd. Mm-hmm. You don't think about all that stuff till you're up there.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, now I'm rapping my lyrics. I'm out of breath. I'm running around the stage and all that stuff. You got to practice that, man. Mm-hmm.
And a really good answer that came in when we teased it during the crosstalk. Driving stick shift home from their first car from the dealership.
So good.
Oh, that's such a good answer.
So good.
That's such a good answer. Because that had to be harrowing. You're like, oh, no, I get it.
I can do that.
I got it. Oh, no. Oh, no. You done ruined the whole car before you even got it home off the lot.
Yep.
And you done used up all the value, too.
Still a pet peeve of mine. Most people need to learn how to drive.
No, they don't. It's not necessary anymore.
Yeah, it is.
Manual cars are not out here.
That is not necessary.
There are a lot of standard cars out here.
There really aren't.
Yes.
There really aren't anymore.
It's fun.
I don't disagree with that.
It's fun.
I'm not disagreeing at all with that. I just don't think that it's as necessary.
Yeah. Like the world not about to end and there's only manuals out here where you got to use a manual.
You don't know that.
Man, that is fair. You don't know that.
You probably still have a landline too, don't you?
No, I do not. Well, I can't even remember the last time I had a landline. That's just fun.
What was your phone number?
732-8560.
Okay, good. I was about to say, you're just about to put somebody out there. People are calling a person's number for no reason.
Mine's with 752-8080.
All right. There we go.
Okay, very good. I'm not doing that same thing. Mostly because I am one of the idiots that don't remember numbers anymore. I know my mama's number by heart, and that's it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you that for damn sure. All right, from the 936 sex. And we move on to around the NFL now.
Most people do.
From we got yesterday news of the newest wide receiver getting paid, and his name is Jets wide receiver Garrett Wilson. That's not his full name. Mm-hmm. I added the other part. His name is Garrett Wilson. But he does play for the Jets, and he is now, over the next 4 years, $130 million richer. Or not the next 4 years, actually. It's a $130 million extension 4 years, but it's tacked on, obviously, mm-hmm. to the end of the current deal that he is still on the rookie deal. I think, starting 2 years, if memory serves correctly?
Yeah.
There, but, I mean, this is it makes him one of the highest paid receivers, at least over the average annual value at that span. This is big money for Garrett Wilson, who's been really good, but has he been better than Nico Collins in your mind?
Well, he's had, three straight 1,000-yard seasons to start his career, which is a better start than Nico Collins
had. Nico's last two have been 1,000-yard seasons.
But not necessarily a better receiver altogether, but he's in the same class. I mean, he's absolutely in the same class. My thing on this is just, you know, with every receiver, every player, but every receiver specifically that gets signed, that deal just looks better and better and better for Nico Collins.
Yeah, is that the best? That's the best one, right? Like, that's the best deal that Nick Caserio signed, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hate people keep bringing it up, too, because I know Nico going to be like, hey, yo, I'm better than this dude right here.
I looked it up. He can't really negotiate till 26, which is next year.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but that's the funny thing about that, though, Reggie, is let's say Nico goes nuts. Like 1,500 yards, 1,400 yards, and then, you know, whatever, you know, 97 catches and all pro and all that. Come 2026, he's going to have to, right?
Yeah, if he get an all pro,
yeah,
it's almost for certain he will go back to the table.
But this is where it gets dicey. 2026 is also Will Anderson Jr. and CJ Stroud.
That ain't his problem.
Yeah, I mean, this is
not his problem.
Yeah. This is where teams around the league keep looking at Nick Caserio, give these dudes the bag and short contracts, and like, hey, man, you messing up the money right now.
Yeah.
And he has a great opportunity to mess up the money in a great way because he's got three cornerstone players that are all coming up, and the MO has been established from him, mm-hmm. and they have all played in such a way or delivered performances that make it so that, yeah, mm-hmm. there's not really any good case to not give these guys money. The one case mm-hmm. that is there to not give Nico Collins, like, just earth-shattering money is sustainability, is injury.
Sure.
And so this will be an interesting season for that as well, because, again, he got injured last year. I don't necessarily blame him for that, but mm-hmm. I think that comes in when you're negotiating.
Of course.
That will be the one thing, is if he has a sustained injury during the season, that might be the only, I don't want to use the word saving grace here, because I don't think the Texans even view it that way. They seem happy to pay guys when they perform for them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that might be the only thing that kind of keeps a level of a governor on what is going to be the next outcome. Because, again, I think that they've set an MO of mm-hmm. short contracts, relatively big money. And if we're talking about Garrett Wilson at 32.5 average annual value, we're talking about Justin Jefferson signing last year a $35 million. It feels like average annual value for him is probably going to be up there, relatively highly guaranteed, and for a pretty short contract.
Right now, Nico Collins, I believe, is either 12 or 13 in among receivers in average annual value. And if he has a monster year, I mean, I don't blame him. And the Texans have some decisions to make.
Honestly, I can see the Texans kind of looking out for him too, man, because mm-hmm. it seems like they look out for the players they really like and appreciate.
Yeah.
They pay them early, a little earlier and stuff like that. So I can see them actually working something out mm-hmm. to keep him happy.
Yeah.
I will be interested, though, if you're starting to see, because Nico is going to be one of the earlier ones that you see. They gave him a deal, and now we negotiate on the back end. Mm-hmm. If there's any level of reciprocity, not that the NFLPA should want that, right? You always, anytime in a negotiation, especially from a union perspective, get the most that you possibly can.
Yeah.
But if there's any level of reciprocity of, hey, we got to you early, like Figgy's talking about, we gave you money early and all this, do you then give us a little bit of a, you know, do you scratch our back on this side? Man, I can't imagine that's the case, but we'll see that.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know who his agent is, but if he go to the mole together, man.
Yeah.
I ain't scratching nothing.
You know what that hand motion is?
Yeah.
Ski mask. But this is an interesting thing that comes in from on the text line from the 281. Nico better stay healthy if he wants to renegotiate. Now, you did mention, right, there's two more years on that three-year mm-hmm. deal that he signed.
Yeah.
Is that correct? Yes.
Yeah.
So, obviously, after this season, he would be available to negotiate.
Eligible.
Most people would want to negotiate in that space. If he does sustain, let's say, the same injury, or mm-hmm. not the same exact injury,
well,
but the same
changes.
Time frame, like he misses five
weeks.
Do you think that there's anything within him that goes, nah, I'd wait and go to the next one and see if I get money? Or is it just, we've proved as a Nico Collins team mm-hmm. that this dude is one of the best, amongst the best. We're just going to negotiate at this point and get the money.
I think he would wait. I think he should wait. If let's say he plays 12 games, 13 games, whatever it may be. You know, the injury thing is going to be over his head. He's going to have to come back the next year and prove I can go 16-17. I think he would wait. Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like you just go and get that money. Like, I feel like he's going to be able to secure big money regardless. But we'll see what that looks like. Continuing around the NFL, let's see. Where should I go? Let's get this because I did tease it. So Teddy Bridgewater, former NFL quarterback as recently as last season where he came back. And served as, what was it, Jared Goff's backup in December. I think he only threw one pass, if memory serves, in the playoffs. But, you know, he'd gotten back into South Florida and gotten into high school, you know, coaching and such.
Yeah.
Now, of course, he left that job in order to return back to football. But on social media this past weekend, if memory serves, he got out there kind of asking, or no, it was earlier this month, in fact, and it was on Facebook. He asked for some donations from, you know, fans in the general public to help, support the school that he is also coaching with, saying that he paid for Uber rides, meals, and recovery services for his players last season. So he asked fans to donate to help cover those kind of expenses. Then we found out that the Florida High School Athletic Association, they suspended, or actually not the Athletic Association, the school, Miami Northwestern, Class 3A.
Because he was a, quote, volunteer, so the Athletic Association couldn't necessarily suspend him.
That's right. But the school suspended him, and he was a volunteer because obviously he gave up the job in order to go back and play football, but the school suspended him for impermissible benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to tee this one up. I want to lob this one up. How do you feel about the school doing that? The Athletic Association is going to gather more information into this, but how do you feel about that particular happening with Teddy Bridgewater?
Well, like, you know, you got to pick the times that you use your harshest words. You know, you got to be
harsh
them.
Words coming out.
You got to pick them. You know, diligently, This is stupid. It's not just dumb. It's
all he had was stupid. I thought stupid. He was going to use some real words.
It's stupid. Not only should they not suspend him, they should build a damn statue. They should build it. Like, this is a guy that had the money, dug into his own pocket. And keep in mind, you know, what, maybe some people, you know, glossed over the particulars of what he actually did. This wasn't like impermissible benefits, like giving a player from another school money to come to your school or paying your players. This was rehab, lunches, getting home from practice.
Uber rides.
You know, stuff like that. This was like just basic things that people in that players in that at that school cannot afford. Not only should they not suspend him, they should build a damn statue for him.
Yeah. It's one of those things where, especially if you played sports, which I know a lot of our listenership does, I think that's, especially being in Texas, but I think in America, we've made, you know, sports, especially for youth sports, a part of the development process. And I think rightfully so. So I think we can all attest to the various things that help develop us. And we can all recall some coach or maybe some teacher or some role model that, you know, did little things like that to help you along your way because it takes a village and all that. And so it did feel bad to see that portion of it. Yeah. And I think you're right. Like this does feel really dumb to see a guy doing those types of things and then leveraging the visibility that he has to maybe get some more support for his kids. But the bigger thing that my bigger takeaway was, it was a reminder for me. High school football is professional, man. Like all of this, we got dudes that are like transferring and going, and you talked about it, like the people that are That wasn't this.
Yeah.
But the reason why those rules exist is because, and we've all seen, right? Mm-hmm. Like a guy goes to a big school, even though it's not technically in that district or whatever, in order to go and play sports. High school sports is even professional. I think I've long held that college sports has been professional for a long time.
Yeah.
You can't even fight that one. Good luck to you on that one at this point. High school sports has been professionalized in a way which does not seem to serve anybody really here. Like, that's the thing that really gets me is just how professionalized. Because the idea that we have on the books and need to have on the books a rule against impermissible benefits when how many times do we talk about educators having to go in their own pocket to help? And even that is kind of outside of the bounds, especially when it comes to this, because we're trying to prevent or, you know, secure the sanctity of the sport when in all reality, what we're supposed to be securing is the growth and development of these kids.
Yeah, shout out to Katie and North Shore. Anyway,
I didn't want to say names specifically, but we know what time it is.
And it's not just them. You know, you're right. It does happen. And I think the biggest thing is, like, you know, some kids' mother or father or whatever gets a job in the district. And it's more of loophole kind of stuff to get kids to go to schools. It is pro in that sense. But again, and maybe they're just you know, the whole thing is just tainted and they had to do this. But this is like basic stuff. Even way back in the day when I played or Seth played or whatever, I know it goes on every week. You know, some kid, like a coach, I can't make it to practice, man, blah, blah. Oh, you know what? Yeah. I'll pick you up. Even that, my coaches used to pick us up.
And this,
even that is technically against the rule.
And it's very pricey to be able to play stuff like that. Like even as far as like uniforms and this and that, all that type of stuff, it costs a lot of money, and some of these cats don't have it like that with their personal situation and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the tough thing about it is I don't necessarily see the way to fix it, per se.
Yeah.
Because as much as we can come in all high and mighty on that stupid, that should not be the case. If you do take that out, like, it just does allow more of this opportunity to fester, because it's not like you're going to change this at the high school level because the money's big enough. Like, the money is just too big.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say the only way you could possibly fix it is the school got to step in and start providing maybe transportation, providing lunches or whatever, stuff like that. But
you want to have the conversation about school funding?
That's the best way to fix it.
Have that conversation with you, maybe not on these particular areas.
If they was providing all that stuff, I don't think people had to go out, go in their pockets to help.
Right.
Yeah.
100%. Mm-hmm. And then finally, right here, I'll hit you with this one here. Ndamukong Suh announced that he was retiring over the weekend. I mean, just, I will never forget. And it's tough because
you mentioned the Nebraska game, the Texas game.
Yes. I'm sorry. Like, Ndamukong Suh has been an incredible NFL player. Like, I don't think that is overstating level play. He was just such a monster in college that it overshadows, and I feel bad.
Yes.
Like, I just remember him in Nebraska eating people's like entire existence.
He won games at the defensive tackle position.
Correct.
Like, how many players can do that? Like, oh, why'd you win the game? That dude right there. But he's a defensive tackle. That dude right there. That dude right there beat us. But you're right. As a pro, an absolute monster. What are you, five Pro Bowls?
Five-time Pro Bowler, three-time All-Pro, which honestly feels low. Mm-hmm. But this is where you start to get to the point where you go, okay, no. And I'll ask the question, right? Mm-hmm. But I think I know a pretty easy answer. Super Bowl champion one time, obviously, with Bucks. 2010s, all 2010s team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, rookie of the year, all that. Defense rookie of the year, obviously, in 2010. I think once you get to the all-decade team.
Oh, he's in.
Hall of Famer. Right?
I know what your question is.
Right, yeah. Hall of Famer, correct?
Yeah, he is absolutely in. He's all-decade team is that to me. That's all I need to know.
All right, so I might be soaring in youthful ignorance here with this question to round this up. Is he? Because again, I'm just operating from my. Mm-hmm. Is he the guy who helped usher in like the D tackles are stars again, or like are mean
this
more
era
in this era?
There was a lull, kind of in the 80s. Because the 70s had some of the best defense. We're going to actually talk about one here in a little bit.
He played defense tackle.
Yeah, who's celebrating a birthday. But the 70s had some monster defenses. Randy White, you know.
Yeah. That's right. You know, I've heard of him.
Guys like that. And then the 80s, there was a low. But this era, yeah, Ndamukong Suh.
Yeah. So shout out to Ndamukong Suh. Fantastic career. And just thank God you're no longer wreaking havoc on the Big 12. All right, you're in the loop. Here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, Reed Sheppard's been shut down for summer league action. That happened yesterday before their third summer league game. I are you convinced that Reed Sheppard is ready for the backup point guard role at this point? 713-572-4610. Let's discuss it next. I'm going to start by saying something insensitive, and I hope that disclaimer does enough for me. I just pulled up summer league stats, which first and foremost, I felt kind of wild doing that because that's not preseason. That's summer league. It's a whole different level.
Welcome back, Reggie.
But I looked at the Hawks game. Obviously, Rockets Hawks summer league game happened yesterday. Do you want to know the final score? Because I don't. And I was like, who are these people? with all due respect to them. And again, that was the insensitive thing. But the reason why I had that was because Reed Sheppard was shut down before that game. Mm-hmm. As a lot of teams will do this with their best players that are playing in summer league.
Yeah.
Is that the player will play the first couple of games, make sure that, hey, we see what we want to see, give you a little bit of that, but we don't need to run you through all of this for you to get hurt. We've kind of gotten a feel of what it is, shut it down. The number one overall pick in this draft, Cooper Flagg, was shut down by the Mavericks in the same way, in the same timing. So this is kind of to be expected. But with what we've seen in summer league, because, you know, this was the time to all eyes on Reed Sheppard, number three pick, last season, a guy who was previously supposed to be offensive rookie of the year leader and then ultimately just didn't get burned. Now this is opportunity. Hey, what are we seeing from him from a team that is all but guaranteed that he will be your backup point guard? Are you convinced that he's ready for that particular role? 713-572-4610.
No, and I don't see how anybody could be convinced. Hopeful.
Okay.
You know, it's easy to be hopeful because of what he can do offensively. But you know, it was so funny. I was mentioning this to you before the show. Yeah, he put 31 up in a game. And then we're seeing they shut him down, after two games because he was averaging 24 points a game. He didn't look that good in the other game. It's you know, shut him down, bring him back. You have high hopes, but convinced? Are you convinced?
No, and it's very particular. And I know B. Scott has gotten all of this as I'll apologize to B. Scott right now over the air for like blowing up his phone during these summer league games. Like he has been the outlet for those things. But there's definitely some really good things. It really does feel, and I need to go back and watch it to like confirm it. But just feeling off of watching the first couple of games, that one of the questions I had for Reed as rookie, I think he has answered, which is it feels like he has a good comfort on, I know when to go for mine and I know when to, you know, get somebody else involved, which is a huge thing if you're going to be an on-ball player, particularly a point guard. You have to, and a guy who is expected to go and shoot and score, it can't be, well, I just pass and then sometimes I look to score, because especially if you're running the bench mob, you're going to be leading that unit, and likelihood is you're going to your shooting and your offense is going to be necessary there. So you can't just, you know, leave yourself out of it. But then you also can't over-index on you trying to score, because then what's the point of you being a distributor?
Yeah.
It feels like he has found a decent balance of that. That's cool. you know, pick and roll game. I would like to see more, but I feel comfortable in the idea that he can run that. He can do those things. You know, he can use some explosion to get to where he needs to get. Those things I'm cool. I will come back, and I think I'm going to be the Reed Sheppard hater through no fault of, like, I don't dislike him. I just, the defense, man. I know that he's out here getting steals right mm-hmm. now, especially in summer league. I know that he has good hands and a willingness to do that. I don't know how tenable it is, especially in an E-mate off defense, but in just in general in the NBA, to have a guy who seems like he breaks down your entire defensive game plan by gambling for some of those steals, or just mm-hmm. not being capable of, you know, or not even not being capable. Sometimes it looks like he's not, like, putting in the amount of effort to stay in front, which I understand if you have the ball in your hand doing both of those things is a lot. Mm-hmm. It does not feel like it's at the right level just yet.
And I think sometimes he is not capable, if we're being honest. He's certainly not, maybe not physically, but he hasn't been able to do it. Here's the thing. I mean, Reed Sheppard, look, of all the things that the Rockets have going for them, second favorite to win the NBA championship right now. I mean, that's pretty impressive. Reed Sheppard is down on the list, but he's important down on the list.
100%.
I mean, with Fred VanVleet and any injury, and we know, I've said this repeatedly, just expect, you know, just slight intended, just expect Kevin Durant to miss about 20 games next year. That's just what he does, and he probably should do. You know, you expect him to be big time in the postseason, but if you're going to miss, you know, Kevin Durant for 20 games or so, you're going to have Fred VanVleet as kind of the only point guard. You got to have Reed Sheppard doing more at the NBA level. You mentioned, you know, what you saw from him in the summer league, the two summer league games. Keep in mind, he averaged 5.3 assists last summer league in the 2024 summer. So he was able to do it in the summer mm-hmm. league. It's a different animal, man. It's a different animal when you're distributing and trying to lead an offense with the regular NBA team and in the regular NBA. So, yes, you know, he showed some things, but he showed some things in the last summer league. So I'm hopeful. I'm just not feeling like I would be confident.
From one of the 832s here on the text line, as I asked the question, are you confident that Reed Sheppard is prepared and ready for that backup point guard role mm-hmm. that it seems very much the Rockets are going to thrust him into? And I honestly will stop and say, I think that this is the right thing to do. You need to have him, mm-hmm. Give him opportunity and for that run-up. And the 832 seems to concur. As they say, I think Reed needs to play. Only way to get better. Agreed. I'm not entirely convinced, though. Yeah. Some of the decision-making is still questionable. Plus, I would rather him have a good game again before he shuts down. Now, so this other 832 makes a point, which I think is one of the big reasons why you definitely need to shut him down. He has a slight calf strain. But my thing about it is, you're playing 82 games, or, you know, the better part of an 82 game season mm-hmm. in the NBA. There's going to be some parts of that. And if I can only count on you, and again, this is harsh, and I don't mean it to sound as harsh as I'm sure as it does, but if I can only count on you to be viable in the ways that we want to use you in 100% optimal situations,
yeah,
we're not going to have very much of that.
Right. And they didn't last year. You know, I mentioned, you know, how we felt, you know, coming out of the summer league last year. Dude was averaging 20 points and 5.5 assists just about. We felt pretty good. You can feel pretty good, but I don't think you can feel confident yet. He's got to do it at this level, and he's got to do it, you know, with this squad in the rotation and getting more minutes.
Yeah. So, I'm very excited to see what it looks like with the more minutes and in that particular space. But the defense still
worries
me.
And defensively, of course.
The defense is, that's my big red flag for me personally, and I understand there's going to be a lot of people that will default to mm-hmm. one of my least favorite NBA things in particular, which is you can't conflate mm-hmm. steals as defense.
Oh no.
And it happens a lot, and Reed is getting them, and, you know, it is good that he is capable of getting them, and it's not because he's, you know, they're just giving them to him. He's mm-hmm. he has a good eye for it. He has very good hands. He pokes the ball at the right time.
Yeah.
But at sometimes, one, summer league is, you don't have the best, truest hands passing the ball in some of these instances, and they're not playing mm-hmm. an offense that is well oiled. So sometimes it's just, hey, this guy threw it to a dude in a different color jersey. That's not by all means what Reed was doing here. But also, there's times, and again, I don't know how to soften this. I'm just going to say it, and I'm going to ask for forgiveness on the backside. There's sometimes where he plays defense that makes it seem like, in his mind, he goes, this is all good. I'll get it back on the other side.
Yeah, it could
be. That is cool for a superstar player to play that kind of defense. That is not good for a role player, even if he is going to be a premier role player, to have a seemingly that kind of defensive. And that's the thing is, I can agree, or I can live with you. You're just not great at defense.
Yeah, look.
I can't live with what feels like you're not maximizing your effort on that.
You got to be Steph Curry on offense if you're going to have that type of defense.
Yeah, and as far as your steals point, I've always said steals is a part of a great defender's game, but steals doesn't make you a great defender.
Correct.
You know, whether it's Kawhi or, you know, go back as far as you want, you know. A lot of guys are good off-ball defenders, and maybe that means that leads to steals. And, you know, James Harden was a pretty good off-ball defender. I always said that. I thought he was even good at reading passing lanes and all
especially
that.
Especially when he could play in the post.
Yeah.
Use his strength.
Yeah, but that wasn't – that didn't make him a great defender.
Yeah. Right, and Reed is not going to be a great defender. Like, I don't think I'm surprising anybody by saying that. I just –
adequate.
He got to be better at offense. Yeah. He got to be banging that offense.
And that's the fun part. Those shots looked fun.
Yeah, no, he can knock it down.
Take all of my skepticism, and now let's have fun. Oh, my God. It is so fun to watch him, like, come off a screen and pull up with the level of confidence that he's had from depth. And then, can we talk about the little bit of trash talking that he showed? Like, that is that is the additional part. It's the confidence that I know that he's had, but that is becoming a little bit more evident, rather. I think that is the fun part. So, when I say I'm not confident about him stepping into that role at this point, but I am, as you said, hopeful. Mm-hmm. And I do have a level of optimism in what it's going to look like. I don't think that the Rockets are entirely out of place for putting him there. But I am still very intrigued to see what it looks like early on in preseason and really early on into the season. And hopefully, very hopefully, I'm really crossing my fingers that in a few months, I'll be proven wrong on this point. But I do still have that concern when it comes to Reed Sheppard right now, as he's been shut down summer league play out there in Las Vegas.